Welcome to the Not All Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang, and this is episode number 235. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living interview series, our guest today on the Not All Better Show is Professor John Furling. John Furling is a professor emeritus of history at the University of West Georgia. Professor Furling is a leading authority on American revolutionary history, and he is the author of several books, including his newest, Apostles of Revolution, Jefferson, Paine, Monroe, and the Struggle Against the Old Order in America and Europe, which is the subject of his upcoming presentation at the Smithsonian Associates Program, America's Authentic Revolutionaries, Jefferson, Paine, and Monroe. Professor John Furling has appeared in television documentaries on PBS, the History Channel, C-SPAN Book TV, and the Learning Channel, and will be talking about his new book, among other things.
Jefferson's resentment of British authoritarianism had led him down the road of revolution, but so too had his abhorrence of the growing inequities in wealth, power, and opportunities among the free people in Virginia. His residence in France as the U.S. minister to France had provided a firsthand look at the result of what he called the enormous inequality producing such misery to the bulk of mankind within Europe. It aroused Jefferson's fear that in time the same evil would take hold in his country and eradicate the sparkling promise of revolutionary America. He had not been in Europe long before he wrote to James Madison that despite the earth having been given as a common stock for man to labor and live on, one generation of the elite after another had wielded their power to invent legal devices for hoarding their wealth and denying others the opportunity to improve their status.
That, of course, is our guest today, Professor John Furling, who will be at the Smithsonian Associates Program presenting America's Authentic Revolutionaries, Jefferson, Paine, and Monroe, which will be available at the Smithsonian Program for purchase and signing July 24th, 2018, at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. Please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show via internet phone, Professor John Furling. Professor John Furling, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm really interested in this subject. I know our audience will be. So tell us briefly about your upcoming Smithsonian Associates presentation, America's Authentic Revolutionaries, Jefferson, Paine, and Monroe.
Sure. It's a presentation that draws on my book, Apostles of Revolution, Jefferson, Paine, Monroe, and the Struggle Against the Old Order in America and Europe. It's a book that came out in May.
And so let's dive into the presentation a little deeper. Why these three? Why Jefferson, Paine, Monroe? What was it that fueled their revolutionary passions?
Sure. Well, I chose these three for a number of reasons. Most importantly, because they were three really fascinating individuals, but also they knew one another, they were close to one another, and they were involved in both the American Revolution and the French Revolution, literally involved in the French Revolution. So they were three really active individuals, and I think by looking at these three, I was able to demonstrate that there was a really radical edge to the American Revolution, and that might seem odd to put it that way, but America was composed of people who had very different views of the American Revolution. About 20% of the people living in America didn't support the revolution at all. They remained loyal to England. And a number of people who supported the insurgency against Great Britain even support of the war against Great Britain did not favor independence. And some who favored independence wanted America to break away from England, but they really didn't want very many changes in America. Socially and to a large extent politically, they wanted America to remain as it had and had been in the colonial period. And there were others who supported independence and thought they wanted change in America until changes began to occur, and then they were frightened by the changes, and they began to try to erect bulwarks against change. But then there were people in the Revolution like Jefferson and Tom Paine and James Monroe who favored independence, and they favored it because it was the only way they could bring about change. I should say they obviously were aggrieved by things that the British were doing. That led them to protest, but also they wanted changes in America, and they knew that the changes could never come about as long as America remained within the British Empire. So ultimately, I think the major reason I chose these three was to look at that radical side of the American Revolution.
Let's talk about the change a little bit. What change did the three bring about? Has it been long-lasting? And how did their own thinking evolve after 1776?
Sure. I think each of them probably saw different things from the American Revolution, but in Jefferson's case, I think Jefferson saw that England was dominated by a small oligarchy, and he saw evidence that Virginia was going in that direction well before 1776. And so he wanted to bring about changes, and the changes that the principal change that he wanted was to broaden the electorate in America so that all free men would be able to vote. So he was really moving toward democracy in America. And once independence is declared, and of course Jefferson has something to do with independence, he's the principal author of the Declaration of Independence, he left Congress and came back to Virginia and began working for changes in Virginia. And he was able, I think, to bring about a number of changes. Maybe the principal change was to bring about a statute. It took about 10 years for it to be realized, but a statute that provided for religious freedom in Virginia. And he also was able to revise the criminal statutes in Virginia so that whereas about 20 crimes were punishable by capital punishment before the Revolution, only two crimes were punishable by capital punishment after the 1770s. He wanted to give for the state to give land to all of the landless adults, at least male adults in Virginia. Wasn't able to bring that about, but he was able, with the help of others, to open up Kentucky, which at that time was a part of Virginia, sort of the western frontier of Virginia. Land was cheap there. People could move out, and almost everybody could become a landowner. And as a landowner, they would meet the property qualifications to vote. And so Jefferson, I think, paves the way for democracy to come about in America. In Paine's case, Paine was not originally from America. He was born in and raised in Thetford, England, which was a small town about 50 miles northwest of London. And his father was an artisan, a skilled craftsman, and Paine was earmarked for that role himself. And He lived in a town where only 1% of the population could vote, and he, like Jefferson, felt that England was dominated by an oligarchy. It was dominated by a king and by a titled nobility, and that they protected themselves, and everyone else paid the piper for that, so that the opportunities to pursue what one wanted to do were extremely limited in England. And Paine, in his pamphlet, famous pamphlet Common Sense, published in January 1776, talks about the birthday of a new world. We have it within our power to change the world, he says in that pamphlet. So that Paine was, if anything, I think even more radical than Jefferson at that point in time, and sought a sweeping revolution that would usher in just untold changes. Monroe was different in the sense that in 1776 he was an 18-year-old college student. So I don't think his views had really been shaped particularly at that point. But he goes off and soldiers during the Revolutionary War, and literally almost paid the ultimate sacrifice. He was in a number of battles, and in the Battle of Trenton on Christmas night, 1776, he was seriously wounded. He took a bullet in the shoulder that severed an artery, and luckily for him, there was a physician nearby who knew how to repair the damage, and Monroe's life was saved. But Monroe, because he soldiered, and as I said, soldiered in a number of engagements, was able to help win the Revolutionary War. And it was one thing to declare independence in 1776, but you had to win independence. And it was through the sacrifice of men like Monroe, who soldiered during the war, that independence was eventually realized.
We are with Professor John Ferling. Professor Ferling is going to be at the Smithsonian Associates presentation July 24th. That's coming up. It'll be at the Ripley Center. We'll put links up to where you can find information about the presentation, more information about Professor Ferling, as well as information about his new book, Apostles of Revolution, Jefferson, Paine, Monroe, and the Struggle Against the Old Order in America and Europe. Professor Ferling, I just have two more questions. I know you're very busy, but I want to talk a little bit about your book, but I want to start by saying broadly with regard to these three, Jefferson, Paine, and Monroe, was there a goal to develop ideas that might fuel revolutions elsewhere? And were these ideas successful?
Well, to a point, they were. I don't think Jefferson or Monroe thought in those terms in 1776, but Paine certainly did. And Paine was hoping from the beginning that the American Revolution would spark changes in England, revolutionary changes in England. There was a vibrant reform movement in England, and Paine, who lived in England until he was 37 years old, and that's when he migrated to America, Paine was part of that reform movement and got many of his ideas from that reform movement. So Paine, I think, from the beginning, sees the American Revolution as something that will, hopefully, if it succeeds and it pans out, it will trigger a revolution in England, and then once the Revolutionary War is won, and the revolution appears to have succeeded, Paine certainly hoped that the revolution would spread elsewhere. And once Jefferson went to France as the U.S. minister to France, and he lives in Paris from 1784 to 1789, a bit more than 5 years. And he traveled extensively while he was there. And on his travels, Jefferson saw a degree of poverty that he said he had never seen before in America. I think what he was, because certainly there was a great deal of poverty involving slaves, but I think what Jefferson probably meant was that among free people, he had never seen such a degree of poverty. And so Jefferson concluded that that the poverty was due to a poor distribution of wealth and of power, and the fact that just a small oligarchy controlled everything in France. So at that point, Jefferson, I think, like Paine before him, became an apostle of revolution in France. He hoped that a French Revolution would come about. And when it did, when it begins in 1789, he's hopeful that it will succeed. And Monroe eventually goes to France as a U.S. minister to France himself. In fact, he literally follows in Jefferson's footsteps time and again. They both had been members of the Virginia Assembly. They both were members of Congress. They both were ministers to France. They both served in a presidential cabinet. They both served as governors of Virginia, and eventually both were president. But when Monroe goes to France, he does what he can to convince the French that America is in its corner, and that America supports the French Revolution, and he's hopeful that the French Revolution will succeed. Unfortunately for Jefferson and Paine and Monroe, while the French Revolution got off to a good start, and it abolished much of many of the evils of the old order, beginning in 1794. It turns really radical and bloody, and the revolution begins to devour revolutionaries in the Reign of Terror. And Paine himself, who was living in Paris at the time, was nearly devoured in the Reign of Terror. He's imprisoned in the Luxembourg prison for 10 months and was ticketed for the guillotine and was just fortunate to survive. So all three of them really supported world revolutions, but when the French Revolution turns into terror, that inhibited other revolutions from occurring. So that ultimately, I think, once Jefferson is elected president in 1800, he and Paine and Monroe see America as the last best hope of humankind, that the revolution has succeeded here, and they continue to hope that the American Revolution will be like a city on a hill, a light for people around the world to look to. And I think it has. Obviously, immigrants have come over all through American history, and they saw America as a land of opportunity, just as Jefferson had written that it was a place where people could pursue happiness. People took that literally, and America became kind of a shining beacon to people around the world, so much so that, in fact, when the Vietnamese declared independence from France in 1946, they included in their Declaration of Independence the second paragraph in the Declaration of Independence that Jefferson had written in 1776.
Important subjects, and so very interesting. Professor John Furling, your new book, of course, I mentioned, Apostles of Revolution, Jefferson, Paine, Monroe, and the Struggle Against the Old Order in America and Europe is worth the read. I encourage my audience to check it out. Again, we're going to put links up. But in the book, you remind us that we often take liberty for granted, and it's ours only if we fight for it. I can think of many issues of liberty today that we should consider fighting for. And I wonder if you thought about some of those issues as you wrote the book.
Well, absolutely. I think every generation that believes in democracy has to realize that there are dangers posed to democracy and not take democracy for granted. And in particular, I think in our lifetime, we have found our politics just suffused with money, that it now takes on average about $10 million to be elected to a U.S. Senate seat, and it takes on average about $2 million to win a seat in the House of Representatives. And so I think we are in danger of becoming a country that's dominated by an oligarchy, just as Jefferson and Paine and Monroe felt that England was an oligarchy and threatened to establish oligarchical rule in the colonies before 1776. And in fact, roughly the same percentage of people that controlled the bulk of the wealth in England in 1776 controlled the bulk of the wealth in the United States today. And that's like the wealthiest 10% of the population controls about 90% of the wealth in the U.S. And that's about what it was in England when the revolutionaries revolted against England. So this is a book that looks at the radical side of the American Revolution, and you can call it radicalism if you wish, to oppose oligarchy and to support democracy, but that was what these apostles of revolution were seeking.
Professor John Ferling, thank you so much for being so generous with your time today. We're looking forward to seeing you July 24th at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. But thanks again, Professor Ferling, for your time, and we'll see you on July 24th.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, Paul.
Thank you. My thanks as well to the Smithsonian team for all they do to support our interviews. And finally, the music today is from the Free Music Archive, performed by the United States Army Old Guard Fife and Drum Corps. Thanks so much to everybody.